Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
The Rose Bowl. The game that inspired the college football bowl season has a long and storied history. The stadium itself is 100 years old, and in celebration of it, Pigskin Dispatch is assembling some of the top historians and authors to share the memories, people, and events that make the granddaddy of them all the special game that it is. Enjoy this Rose Bowl memory from PigskinDispatch.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes with PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal of positive football history. And we are talking about the Rose Bowl this month and the history of the great game and all the aspects and people around it. And we have a very knowledgeable historian and author who's written a couple books on football, and some have some Rose Bowl information in it. And that's Timothy P. Brown of Football Archaeology. Tim Brown, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Thank you. I hope neither you nor your listeners are bored out of their minds or tired of listening to me, but hey, let's give it a shot and see what we can, what kind of punishment we can put them through.
Hey, the alternative is they'd be listening to me, and they listen to me every day of the year. So they it's a refreshing to get another voice that's much more knowledgeable than I am, and especially about this history of the Rose Bowl. You've been on a couple times talking about some great Rose Bowl aspects, and you have a great topic tonight as we're going to go into the 1920s and talk about some Rose Bowl there.
Yeah. So we're going to chat a bit about the 1920 Rose Bowl, which ultimately was played by Harvard and Oregon. And so, you know, I kind of touched on this in the past, but, you know, this is still in the period where what we now call the Ivies, you know, that league didn't form till like 1953, but the, you know, Brown had been in the 16 Rose Bowl, then Penn in 17. We had the two war years, and now all of a sudden Harvard is playing in the 1920 game. And so, you know, it kind of follows, you know, this obviously 1920 followed the war years, right? But, you know, that had a couple of implications. You know, one was just that, you know, there had been 2 years where a lot of college students had either volunteered or been drafted and had entered the military. And then all those guys mustered out and were back on campus. So, you know, there was a lot of talent on the 1920 teams, or a lot of competition for spots, because you kind of had 6 years worth of players on, you know, what would normally be a 4 year team. So just in general, you know, it was quite a competitive time. And, you know, you had on, you know, both teams, a lot of these guys were, had been in the military. So everybody on the Harvard team that year had been in uniform during the 1918 season. Now, some of them were on campus at, you know, in an SATC role, but there are a bunch of others that served overseas. Their captain, Bill Murray, was an ensign on the USS San Diego that was either hit a mine or was torpedoed off of Long Island and sunk, you know. So, you know, a lot of these guys are guys who had been through some things, and even the coaches, you know, three of the Harvard coaches were were veterans and had been over, you know, in France. So you got a lot of things like that going on. It was also, you know, 1919 was the 50th season. Well, I guess it was 51st season of, you know, football. Assuming that if you accept that the Princeton Rutgers game was the first football game. So,
maybe we'll just say it's the 51st season of organized intercollegiate athletics. How's that sound? This might be better.
Well, yes. So anyways, you know, Harvard goes through and, you know, has a successful season. And, you know, they get take an invitation, you know, accept the invitation to play. And they end up meeting an Oregon team that I said in, you know, some of the earlier episodes, especially the one about the, you know, World War I Rose Bowls. There are a lot of guys who played for Oregon who were on either Camp Lewis or the two Mare Island teams. And so some of these guys, there are two or three, maybe even, you know, four guys who were on three separate Rose Bowl teams, or who played in three Rose Bowls, because they played in the 17 Oregon game. They played in either 18 or 19 on one of the military teams. Then they were back at Oregon in 20, or for the 20 Rose Bowl, right? And, you know, three of Oregon's starters that year in the 20 Rose Bowl were started in 17 Rose Bowl. And then four of their starters had been in the Rose Bowl before, right? Either with the military team or with Oregon. So anyways, you know, both teams, you know, pretty experienced groups of guys, you know, guys who had been through some things. So it's just, you know, an unusual set of circumstances. But, you know, the game itself, Harvard was, you know, kind of anybody who watched the game would have come away saying, you know, Harvard was the more powerful team. They were the bigger team. But they just, they looked a bit ponderous. You know, they weren't in the same kind of shape as Oregon was. But unfortunately for Oregon, their top player, a guy named Spears, who had played for Mare Island the year before, he was knocked unconscious early in the game and didn't return. So that they kind of struggled without him. He was also, as often was the case, he was their kicker as well. And so, you know, the game ends with Harvard, you know, Harvard wins 7-6. So it was, you know, that was a big deal because the Eastern or Ivy team had lost in 1916 and 1970. So now Harvard goes out there and shows the rest of the country how it's really done, right? And they, you know, they win the game. You know, so, but, you know, I view it as kind of, okay, that it was kind of the death knell of the Ivy type teams as, you know, being the premier football teams in the country. You know, Columbia ends up in the Rose Bowl in like 34, and I'm missing somebody, but there's another team that, you know, that plays in the 20s. But it was kind of a little bit of the end of an era, right? I mean, they just, there would still be really good teams, you know, here and there. I mean, Cornell had some great teams in the 20s, and Princeton had some great teams with Kazmaier and some of those guys, you know. But, you know, the Big Ten, the Pacific Coast teams, and then in the 20s and 30s, you know, you saw the real rise of Southern football, you know, and then become, you know, every bit as competitive as anybody else, right? So it kind of marked a little bit of the end of an era as far as that's concerned.
Sort of the end of them being the dominant, you know, East Coast teams, the Yales, Penns, and Harvards, and Princetons of the world that dominated football so much that first, you know, 40, 50 years of football.
Yeah.
Sort of that era dropping off. Yeah. That's pretty significant. And
People don't think about it, but, you know, or don't realize it, but it's actually something I mentioned in Field of Friendly Strife, but Penn was the biggest school in the country when the U.S. entered World War One. You know, I mean, you don't think of them that way, but several of the Ivy type schools were among the biggest. Wisconsin was a big school, Michigan was a big school, and Cal was a big school, but a lot of schools were pretty darn small. Oregon only had 800 students in 1917. So, you know, a lot of these schools were small. And then the Ivies just never really, you know, they never ramped up. You know, Penn's pretty big, but, you know, you think about the size of some of the big state schools, and those really started growing in the 20s and then especially after World War II. So, you know, they just, the Ivies didn't follow that path, right? And so they didn't have access to the same level of talent in the non-scholarship eras and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, they just, and then philosophically, there were some things going on too, obviously, but, you know, they just weren't, they just here and there, they'd be competitive because they had some great athletes, but they just never were quite the same. They lost the dominance that they had had.
Huh. Very interesting. Well, all good things must come to an end. And Tim, why don't we take this opportunity to share with the listeners where they can get information from your football archaeology site?
Yeah. So it's just, you know, go to the site. It's footballarchaeology.com. You can either just, you know, browse through it. There's a search function to, you know, if you're looking for a specific topic. You can also subscribe, and you can subscribe for free, or there's paid subscriptions. But just if you subscribe for free, you're going to get a daily email with a tidbit that shows up at 7 o'clock Eastern every night in your inbox, and a couple of other articles that'll, you know, pop up in the course of a month as well. Or you can follow me on Twitter, just find Football Archaeology, not the guy in England who looks at football stadiums over there, the other kind of football, but the one with the old looking helmet, and you'll find me. So, so follow me on Twitter if that makes you happier.
All right. Tim Brown, historian, author, and becoming quite the podcaster now, being on shows quite often. So we appreciate you coming in here and sharing the Rose Bowl history and football history with us once again. So thank you very much, sir.
Always a blast. Thank you, sir. And Merry Christmas.
All right, you too.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast as well as Jersey Dispatch on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.